We have before us today perhaps a little bit of a startling title, Getting Wicked Fat. And I thought that perhaps go a little bit outside the usual, in which I would describe that title before we begin, so that I would not unnecessarily have one offended. So as we're looking at getting wicked fat, the first thing we notice there is wicked. And wicked, of course, has to do with sin, with darkness, those things to be avoided. Fat speaks of excess. So as we put wicked and fat together and we get wicked fat, it's talking about this excess of sin. And within this excess of sin, it provides a vehicle, a direct assault upon integrity. Now, if everyone could, just please get this definition of integrity down. Children, especially you, there will be a quiz at the end of this. Integrity is consistently doing right, especially when no one is watching. We're continuing our study through some Old Testament passages just to realize how important they still are to us. It's so easy for us as New Testament Christians to get caught up in the idea that the New Testament is all for us and, you know, these are old dusty historical stories. Well, hopefully we can see again today as we look at 1 Samuel chapter 2 that it has some very important lessons for us. Number one, I want us to take a look at a bad situation in verses 12 through 17 of 1 Samuel chapter 2. Reading at verse 12. Eli's sons were wicked men. They had no regard for the Lord. Now, at this point in the book of Samuel so far, we have seen how that this mother, who wasn't yet a mother, was pouring her heart out to the Lord, wanting a child. She had been barren. The Lord blessed her and gave her a child, and in return for the blessing, she gave him back. And he was being raised in the temple to become the priest that the Lord would have. So we can see that the mother's purpose of praying for this child was that she would receive that blessing. But we can also see, as we take a look here at chapter 2, verse 12, God's purpose of bringing Samuel into the picture of being the priest that the nation of Israel requires is very much tied to God's purpose because of what was happening with Eli's sons. Now we see here the word wicked, which is another way of saying worthless. We had an interesting discussion this morning in Sunday school in which we were trying to understand this conflict between good and evil. And they correctly defined good as that having to do with the character, the qualities, the will of God. Evil, though, is not the antithesis, is not the opposite of good, but is rather the absence of good, so that they are not on an equal basis. There is an equal force between good and evil. One is positive good, and the other is the negation of that. So we can see that within this, that they were wicked, they were worthless. They had no regard for the Lord. In other words, they were considering everything for themselves, not how it would impact God or anybody else, but just a totally selfish way of doing it. It's another way of saying these two men operated completely outside the realm of faith. Verses 13 and 14. Now it was the practice of the priests with the people that whenever anyone offered a sacrifice, and while the meat was being boiled, the servant of the priest would come with a three-pronged fork in his hand. He would plunge it into the the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot, and the priest would take for himself whatever the fork brought up. This is how they treated all of the Israelites who came to Shiloh. This is basically just a verse that's telling us this was the custom. This is how it was described in the book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy about how the priests were to be compensated for their work. And they were basically getting the meat. So there's nothing wrong with that. This was just a practice. This is how they got paid. This is how they got their meat to eat. Now within this, then, we can see that as this goes on, verse 15, this story takes a bad turn. But even before the fat was burned, the servant of the priest would come and say to the man who was sacrificing, "Give the priest some meat to roast. He won't accept boiled meat from you, but only raw." Now, within this, what is happening is that these two sons of Eli, though they know, though they're familiar with a law that says the fat belongs to the Lord, I don't know if they had a Weber or not, but they certainly realized there was something a whole lot tastier to a grilled steak than boiled meat. This was obvious. And even within ourselves, if we were given the choice between eating some boiled meat or a grilled steak, which one would we choose? And if there was nothing else on the table, we would choose steak. But I would like to think that as believers in Jesus Christ, that we would know it is more important to please the Lord than it is to please ourselves. And so the ones who are going to choose the boiled meat are those that would rather please the Lord than please themselves. Now, I just want to stop right here. And this morning, you've already heard about bread, and you've already heard about steak. And so you've got visions of a steak sandwich running through your head. Well, let me just say for a moment, Jesus Christ has died on the cross. Our sins are forgiven. No more do we have to sacrifice animals. And so getting back to our text, sorry to bring up food before you've eaten, but I need you to just block that out of your mind right now and focus for another half hour. As we continue in this story, then, we see that they were operating outside of faith. They were wanting to take this for themselves. Notice as this continues, verse 16. If the man said to him, "Let the fat be burned up first, and then take whatever you want," the servant would then answer, "No, hand it over now. If you don't, I'll take it by force." We can see that within this priestly function, these people are coming and they're imploring, "I know you want your steak, but at least let us burn off that part that is supposed to be God's." And you know, from a position of faith, this makes no sense to Eli's sons. It's like, why waste the best part on God? He's going to get a little bit of smoke. Is that really going to satisfy him? Why waste it? So we can understand that as we talk to people in our life, and they don't necessarily get the whole faith thing, it's one of those kind of deals. It just doesn't make sense to them when they aren't able to see it through the eyes of faith. So we can see that they're making this bad situation worse, that they are knowingly violating God's law and his will. And of course, anytime anyone chooses to deny others the opportunity of demonstrating their faith, or is forcing people to do what they know is a violation of God's law and will, that it is wrong. And it is in direct rebellion against God. And so it's very easy for us coming from a position of faith to look at this story and go, don't want to be like Eli's sons. Verse 17. This sin of the young men was so very great in the Lord's sight, for they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt. And to be able to describe the contempt, it would be like if you took that sacrifice that was meant for the Lord and you threw it on the ground and you stepped on it or you spit on it. That's the idea of contempt. Like, this is nothing. Number two, we see a good contrast in verses 18 through 21. Now here we see the sheep's scene shift from the wicked sons of Eli back to Samuel. So here we go with Samuel. Let's not try to say that one again. Okay, but Samuel was ministering before the Lord, a boy wearing a linen ephod. Each year, his mother made him a little robe and took it to him when she went up with her husband to offer the annual sacrifice. Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife, saying, "May the Lord give you children by this woman to take the place of the one she prayed for and gave to the Lord." Then they would go home, and the Lord was gracious to Hannah. She conceived and gave birth to three sons and two daughters. Meanwhile, the boy Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. Now we know from a very early age, 3 years old, Samuel goes to live at the temple and he's being raised and Eli's kind of keeping an eye on him. He is dressed up in this linen ephod, which is a way of saying he had a priestly robe on. In other words, as a little tyke, he is growing up to the very thing that God has designed for the role God has designed him to fulfill. And so it speaks of how that Samuel has connected himself to the love of God, the care of God, the ministry that God has for him. And so this stands in such a contrast. And within, Elkanah and his wife Hannah, they're blessed with five more children as the gracious blessing of God. This is given us here to say that Samuel is being groomed to be the priest Israel needs. Oh, this is just interjecting this story before we go back to point number three, an ugly result in verses 22 through 25. The story is back on Eli and his sons. Notice we pick it up here in verse 22. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel and how they slept with a woman who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. So he said to them, "Why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about these wicked deeds of yours. No, my sons, it is not a good report that I hear spreading among the Lord's people. If a man sins against another man, God may mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him?" As we take a look at what Eli is telling his sons, is there any dads out here that kind of feel sorry for Eli right now? You don't? Okay, well, maybe you already know how this story goes. Anyway, so we're all informed. Okay, that's good. As we take a look at this, Eli is taking the story a step further, a step deeper. That not only are they showing contempt for the sacrifice, but they're committing immorality. Now, within this entrance to the place, you understand with sacrifice, we're talking live animals that are slaughtered for the sacrifice. And I don't know how many of you have ever slaughtered anything to eat. But there's a certain mess associated with it. There is never a wife that says, oh, bring the pig in here, slaughter it in my kitchen. No, it's out behind the garage somewhere. Maybe because it's a mess. Well, within this mess and the association with blood, the priests were prohibited from cleaning it up. And so they would appeal to the people, to the congregation, in which women that were homemakers and didn't have the regular job outside the house, didn't have a time card to punch, they would volunteer their time and they would come and volunteer to clean this entrance into the sanctuary. So these ladies that are volunteering a service to the Lord, these two sons are basically trying to seduce them that they can do what they want. So Eli is saying this is really, really bad. And he's telling them that you've got to knock this off, because if you don't, you're understanding you don't have a way to change things. Eli's telling them, knock it off, because this isn't one in which you can ruin your reputation. This is one in which God may kill you. It's within that that we see this story progressing. Eli gives them this message. The sons do not listen. And with this, we can see that verse 25 again, if a man sins against another man, God may mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him? His sons, however, did not listen to their father's rebuke, for it was the Lord's will to put them to death. Quite a gruesome end to this story as we see it right in here. And as we're looking at this, we can see that there's some difficulty in the story of us reconciling how that God has willed for them to die because of the horrendousness of their sin. Now, as we take a look at this story today, for those of us here that are coming from a perspective of faith, we really don't have a relate point with Eli's sons. If you're still here without Jesus Christ, you maybe can still relate to Eli's sons. But for the rest of us, we're beyond that. Now, we can take a look at Samuel and we can see this great contrast that Samuel is. And we say, wow, this is cool. We can be just like Samuel. And yes, we can. But to get the import of the story here, I think we need to turn our attention upon Eli. And what is going on with Eli? Because as we understand Eli, we can understand this progression of events that has happened. If you would, turn over a page or two to the way this story ends in chapter 4, verse 18. In chapter 4 and verse 18, we read, Eli fell backward off his chair by the side of the gate. His neck was broken and he died, for he was an old man and heavy. Now, for any of us that have struggled with weight from time to time, we know we don't get ourselves in a place that we really don't want to be overnight or in a week or two. It usually takes months or even years of not giving proper attention to the fact till we are not height and weight proportionate. Within ancient culture, being heavy was a badge of honor. It meant you were rich and you had prestige. After spending 2.5 weeks in Africa, I understand this. Because within Africa, you have got to spend upwards of 8 hours to prepare the food for your one meal. This was, I'm assuming, going to be pretty much true back here as well. So that if you're having to spend that much time to make one meal and still work to be able to provide, you're in kind of a tough spot that your chances of being overweight are astonishingly reduced. But for the wealthy and the prestigious, they would have somebody else prepare the food so they could eat anytime they wanted. And if they're wealthy, they can eat pretty much whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted. And it was this eating the richer food, eating the fattier food, eating the, by the way, you know, no fat, no taste, more tasty food, that it makes sense that the wealthy would be carrying a few extra pounds because they could. Now, as we look at this story here today, we've got to be clear to understand that as we think about Eli and his life, it is not about being heavy. It's not about Eli being overweight. It's about Eli sacrificing his integrity. What happened? What happened to Eli? Was it not that at the very time in which he is telling his sons, don't violate the law of God, live according to the faith, live according to the commandments that we are given, that Eli is busy gnawing on an unlawful T-bone steak served up by his sons? We've got to make the connection. We've got to make the link. Eli was not only heavy. Eli was, back to our intro, wicked fat. Because Eli had taken the excess of sin as his own and thereby had lost the chance, the opportunity to make a difference in his son's life. Eli punted it away because Eli was wicked fat. Now, as we consider this whole example of Eli, that there are dire consequences to us sacrificing our ability to be effective with those that God has designed us to be effective with. That is primarily those that are closest to us. If we want to make a difference in their lives, if we want to see ourselves being helpful there, we have to understand there has probably been a process of time in our lives in which we have allowed ourselves in some way to become wicked fat, that we have become ineffective in being able to influence those closest to us. And of course, within this, we can understand, wow, this is tough. You know, parents, I'm sure you get this. This is especially for you. As parents, have children ever pointed out your faults? Of course they have. It's what they do. Now we come with the tough question. What have you done about it? Have you taken corrective action? Have you put yourselves in the position that you're going, wow, I don't want to have my children looking at me like I'm wicked fat in whatever area it is? We get that. So as we're looking at this, you know, it's one of those things that we don't want to allow ourselves to be ineffective, to be perceived as wicked fat to someone else we're trying to influence. So within this, I want us to understand the purpose of this story. To speak on a subject like integrity. It's not one of those that it's like, I'm going to get done here this morning and everybody's going to be like, let's just jump out in the aisles for a group hug. I'm sorry, it's not one of those kind of messages, because when we deal with integrity, it's a call for us to rise above where we are to somewhere better in the power of God. And to so do that is not one of those that, boy, that was the friendliest message Scott's ever given us. No, this isn't one of those. But for some reason, God wanted me to bring Eli to you today, so I am. The purpose here is not that we should in any way, shape, or form feel defeated. But we have the ability to live a life of integrity that we can trim away through the power of God, the wicked fat that has made us ineffective, that we would be effective for Him. May we be a people that do not allow any area in our life, any personality flaw, any sin that is taking us away from operating in faith, an emphasis upon works of what we're doing rather than receiving the grace of God. And that within this, we would be able to put ourselves that we are very much concerned with trimming out our own wicked fat. Can you imagine if we were the kind of congregation that was so loving and so kind, so supportive, so encouraging to one another, that we would actually be able to go to one another and just say, excuse me, your wicked fat is showing. And we wouldn't be offended, but we would be grateful, because now we have the opportunity to trim it away before our lives are demonstrated to be ineffective in our witness. Three things perhaps that would give you something to hang this message on integrity upon. Number one, self-examination is essential to integrity. Without self-examination, we are dependent upon others. And by the time we have waited for them to indicate to us, because we can't just say, excuse me, your wicked fat is showing. No, we would be offended at that. So it's a longer process. So that by the time somebody realizes, I really can't let this go any longer, the damage has already been done. We have already made ourselves ineffective. The only way we have of preventing that is that daily we're examining ourselves, that there is no sin in excess in our lives that make us ineffective. Number two, embrace all opportunities to rid yourself of wicked fat. All. And the reason I say this is simple, is because we all know at one time or another. You know, are we an honest group here today? How many of you before in terms of ridding sin in your life have tried and failed at a particular time. Okay? It may not be right, but it's popular. We've all experienced it. So we need to recognize we come here with a common thread running through each of us, in which I dare say we should not shrink away because of past failures from taking on integrity as something we really need in our life. And the reason I say that is, we take a look at Eli, who had this opportunity to have his sons continue in what he is doing, and his sons are reprobate. They're wicked. They're worthless. And we can see the connection here, how that Eli was not the father he should have been. And in so doing, he disqualified himself. Now, then, understanding that here this morning, how many of you, please show your hands, would like to repeat Eli's family history? Okay, good. You get it. None of us do. We should be able to recognize the fact right now today. Yes. Yes, I do want integrity. That's what I want in my life. I want it to count. I want it to be effective. I don't want to miss opportunities to influence positively those that are closest to me. By understanding Eli's failures, you're already putting yourself in the position, this is what I want. So let's not miss opportunities to do just that. Number three, achieve the integrity you already desire. Self-examination sets up vulnerability. You know, we've got to understand if we are going to be people of integrity, we need to grow spiritually. We need to change. We need to be more like Jesus. Dads, I know, without having to make this a test, write out the answers. I know you want to be effective in your role as a father and as a husband. Wives, I know you want to do the same. Children, it's no different for you. You know, would you rather grow up and be a Samuel, or would you rather be one of Eli's sons? Read this story before you answer that if you want to see how the rest of this one pans out. And within that, I guess what I'm saying is that, children, do you desire integrity as well as your parents? Hey, children, that's a question for you if you're under the age of 16. You know, do you want to have a life of integrity? Uncertain? Raise your hand. Make me feel better. Okay. The integrity is what? Consistently doing right, even when nobody's watching. The effect of it is that you will be able to influence others close to you how you want them to be influenced. You know, let us be diligent in this spiritual exercise, effective in our Christian life towards God. Because if we are, we will trim away all wicked fat. Lord, thank you for this story about Eli's sons and Samuel, in which we can see that things have gone very poorly because of a lack of integrity. It's easy for us to see, Lord, that we want integrity. But Lord, sometimes it's a little bit more difficult to pursue it because we try it in our own strength and we come up short. We thank you that your grace, your power is sufficient for all things. Be with us now as we celebrate communion. In Christ's name.